Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, Wednesday night, we're with Life and Leadership Network with Coach Reverend Morrell P. Brown, and we have special guest tonight, Mrs. Sharon Mullins Nelson, director of Woodland Academy in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and tonight's topic is women's worth. You know, this is Women's Month, Women History Month, so that's a good topic. Women's worth, empowering women to love themselves. And we'll be talking with Mrs. Sharon Mullins Nelson in a minute. We're going to bring on your host with the most, the power for the hour, Reverend Coach Morrell P. Brown. We're going to bring her in, give him a nice hand.
Thank you so much, Reverend Dr. Ron. I truly appreciate it.
Thank you. And I forgot to mention, I'll tell you how you're getting old, but don't get cold. I've got to mention that show, VIP guest, Bertha Gilliard, your mother, prayer warrior and evangelist. Yes. And she's going to have five topics tonight, forgiving yourself, which is very important. So ask mother, forgive me. Don't put it to my heart. Put it on man's mind. But we have some special. You know, this is Women History Month. So the conversation you're having is very, very historical and is very, very helpful as well. So I'm very excited to hear the conversation tonight with Alberta Gilliard, which is your mother, and evangelist and prayer warrior and evangelist and cook. And cleaner, and
yes, he is.
Teacher, let me see what else I can add on there. Pretty,
I know that's right.
A very pretty young woman. Just exciting. A lot of energy, and just a loving spirit that makes you feel. If you ain't got no mama, you need to talk to Mama Alberta, because she'll definitely make you feel like she's your mama, and that's a great, great, great feeling. And I'm from South Carolina, so, you know, I'm used to that, you know?
I know, that's right.
Everybody's your mama, you know? Yeah, great, great. So how you feeling?
Wow. I'm doing pretty well. You know, it's been a good week thus far, and I'm just excited about, you know, this particular month, March, you know, celebrating the life, the legacy, you know, and the contributions of the female. And so I am so excited to, you know, have our guest, Mrs. Sharon.
You talk about birth of
Molly
a nation,
Nielsen.
You got to think of women. Yes, and we're going to bring
absolutely
on our special guest, Ms. Sharon Mullins Nielsen, and director of the Woodland Academy in that great city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and women's work. We're going to talk about women's work, empowering women to love themselves. Nothing greater than that. Let's bring her on right now and give a nice welcome, everyone.
Welcome, Sharon, Mrs. Sharon Mullins Nielsen.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me, Morrell.
Oh, you're definitely welcome. Definitely welcome. I'm excited about tonight because, you know, this is the time in the season where we celebrate the life, the legacy, and the contribution of the female, of the women, you know. And just to have you, Sharon, a phenomenal, phenomenal individual, you know, mother, you know, you are wife. You're an auntie, you know, you a grandmom, you know, you are director of Woodland Academy Child Development Center in the greater Philadelphia, you know, Pennsylvania area, and you're doing some phenomenal things. So I just want you to tell the audience just a little bit about you. I'm looking at your bio. It is one whole page long with extensive experience.
Yeah, so thank you so much for those kind words, Morrell.
You're welcome.
I just, when you started talking, I was trying to figure out who you were talking about. it's just an honor to be able to be on this platform and just to share some things that are really near and dear to my heart. So I originated from Jamaica, West Indies, and I came to New York City when I was around 7 years old, was raised in East New York most of my life. And then I relocated to Philadelphia. And I have been working in the field of early childhood education for over 40 years now.
Wow.
Can't believe
wow.
it. Yes. See? Yes. I started
time.
When I was two.
I know that's right.
Yes. And I am just honored to use this opportunity just to talk, like I said, about something that's really near and dear to my heart, and that is, you know, women. And women has always been a love of mine, and when it comes to who we are as a people and who we are as individuals, it's just something that to me is very empowering when I can uplift other women and just have a conversation with them. And this is what I really want it to be about. I don't want it to be any informal. I really want us to create an environment where we can share and just uplift each other as sisters in the faith, as sisters within our community, as sisters who are passionate about family and community. So thank you for having me.
You're definitely welcome. Wow. I'm so elated just to have you. We've been friends for, let me say, at least, 40 years?
You know? 40 years.
Yes. And so, you know, like you said, growing up in East New York, which is so interesting because it was a journey, you know? And in terms of, you know, we were similar in that I grew up without my dad, and you lost your dad at an early age. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, we both grew up with mothers who were single-handedly, you know, raising at least over 5 children, you know.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's only the grace of God and mentorship that help us to be where we are today, you know. And most
definitely.
Of the time, our mom is the first hero, you know.
Exactly. And so there is a saying that says the hand that rocks that cradle rules the world, you know, and that's a really, really powerful statement. And I don't think that we as women and a society as a whole really understands the depth and the meaning of what that phrase is saying. And so because as women, for some of us, our primary role has been the caretaker of the children, and that's where the hand that rocks that cradle. We are our child's first teacher. You know?
Yes,
and so from us, children learn what they their first understanding of the world, their first understanding of who they are, their first understanding of the society, the family structure, and that larger community that they live in. It's from that hand that's rocking that cradle, and that's an awesome responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we as women have to learn how to love ourselves, because that's when we're raising children. Children are looking for us for examples of love, so they can understand how to love themselves and how to love others. So that's really important that we as women understand our role in society and our influence also as women.
And
so I'll remember
what you're saying. I'm sorry.
Yes, exactly. And I think that that's a nod for us to our mothers who raised us. And I think that I can say safely that your mother, Mrs. Gaylord, and my mother, Mrs. Mulling, they kind of raised us without that understanding that there was a barrier that, you know, a lot of other women might grow up with, the understanding that there's so far that you can go in society, that there's so far that you can do, that you need to stay in this role as a secretary, you need to stay in this role as a nurse or as a teacher. And I think that's what gave us the boldness to start a organization at 19 and 21. Like, we had no idea that that wasn't something that we couldn't do, because nobody told us, you know, you can't do that. You're too young.
True.
We saw the need in the community.
Yes.
We saw the gap. And we went in and we filled that gap, and we started an organization called AIM, Improvement and Motivation. And we went around and collected all of the other youth that we saw that were just hanging out without any purpose, without any adult interventions or mentorships, and we took them under our wings, and we planned trips. I mean, it was just amazing when you sit back and think of it as a 19-year-old just starting college and you working, that we just came up with this idea and this concept, like, this is what we're going to do. And for me, I realized that a lot of women do not have the opportunity to think about the possibilities, about their own possibilities and what is available to them. And so they kind of, sometimes we can get discouraged and aim low instead of really aiming high. And so that's also a part of this process of empowering other women to really break those barriers and to be bold and to be brave in their life and in their roles.
Wow. That's powerful, you know, Sharon, in terms of, you know, just it starts from home, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Home is almost like that first institution. And it's interesting because in addition to, I was talking to my mother about this the other day, you know, whereas she would actually, she raised seven of her children, right? Even if she mm-hmm. had 10, you know, a few, you know, died between childbirth or age seven. And then my oldest, Sophie Vaughn, was raised by my grandmother. But as far mm-hmm. as in public housing in East New York, there were seven children that she was mm-hmm. rearing. But then she also went into, you know, to do home attendant or, you know, home mm-hmm. health aid, you know, and taking care of another home or another older person. And so it's so interesting that even from the time of slavery, we have always had that hand, that anointed, that empowering hand, that, you know, superior hand to rear and to nurture. And it's so interesting because today it is challenging for some parents to navigate a child on the computer and they're on their laptop. But when, like you said, the empowerment comes to be able to say to them, you can do this. You know, it's not just in your DNA or your genes, but it's in your spirit. This is where you come from, you know, that you can navigate this new system of now taking back responsibility of your child to rear them and to mold them, to give them values, morals, you know, and to teach them how to focus and increase their ability to focus, you know.
I definitely agree. And, you know, you just brought up another part because, see, my understanding that East New York is not the same East New York that we grew up in.
Yes, you're right. A lot
I'm
has
sorry,
changed.
I have my grandkids, so yes, a lot has changed.
I do hear them in the background, which is
yes,
a good
when
thing.
We,
yeah.
When we were growing up, that it was a pretty rough neighborhood that we grew
right.
up in. It was a lot of crime, and it was a lot of dysfunction, you know?
Right.
And
yes.
So I remember that, you know, we had to come in before the streetlights went on, and even though you and I lived like two blocks, we spent many of our time walking each other home. Like you would walk me home,
exactly.
and then I would be concerned about you getting home, and then I walk you back home, and then you would come back and walk me back home until one of our brothers came in. It's like, okay, this got to
See?
Stop. Let me just walk one of y'all home, and then we'll be good to go. Right. Exactly. But the thing I think that a lot of us women, you know, as women sometimes, and I don't want to categorize as to say all women, but
right.
A lot of women are really sponges and we soak in a lot of emotions and we soak in a lot of blame. We soak
yes.
in a lot of things that are happening within our, around our surroundings. And so that empowerment
uh-huh.
is really for us as women to understand that we are not our surroundings, you know,
right.
we are not the circumstances
Absolutely.
In which we were raised.
Right.
And sometimes we're even not those challenges that we face as we are, you know, growing up. And so we have
mm-hmm.
to affirm who we are as women and lean into our strengths and
yes.
Understand the chances of our birth and despite the circumstances of who raised us and despite
yes.
The circumstances
mm-hmm.
of how we were raised, that we're
yes.
still destined for greatness
mm-hmm.
and we're still destined to be who God has created us to be.
Right.
We've got to hold
Absolutely.
On to that, and we've got to let that soak into our souls and feed us and
mm-hmm.
drive us and move us forward. And that's where that love is. And without
yes.
that love, we tend to make like a lot of mistakes. And so I think for me, one of the first things that we have to learn is how to love ourselves, you know, how
yes.
to love our beautiful face, our dark skin, our light
yes.
skin, our kinky hair, our big
uh-huh.
lips, our big nose,
right.
our thighs, just to love who we are and who God has created us
right.
to be. And not to look at society and what society
mm-hmm.
has dictated to us, what beauty looks
mm-hmm.
like, you know,
mm-hmm.
and not to,
mm-hmm.
to say, well, I'm not like that, so I can't be beautiful.
Right.
No, you are
mm-hmm.
beautiful. You are beautiful
right.
in the way that God has made you. And to learn to love ourselves and to affirm ourselves and to affirm the other young girls or women around us who may be suffering with that self-esteem too.
Yes, yes. Wow, that's very powerful. I like the analogy of the sponge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
because what happens is that we are shaped, our personality, you know, mm-hmm. our attributes, our characteristics is shaped pretty much from the mirror, from looking at our, you know, it can be parents, family, community, culture. And, you know, as you're saying, we, with the help of God and the help of, you know, mom and other mentors who came into our lives, you know, we were able to see a different picture. And today mm-hmm. is challenging because there is a lot of example. Actually, there is a lot of example. It's how what we're looking at, you know what I mean? You know,
right.
If we're focusing on the reality shows where all you're seeing is sisters fighting, then you get this picture that we can't get along, you know, or
yes,
someone
yes.
just mm-hmm. so intoxicated with how long mm-hmm. they're here or where they purchase their hair from mm-hmm. and how much they purchase their hair for, those types mm-hmm. of things. But if we can focus, like you said, on and soak up the God's image of us, you know, that we are created in his image and we're after his likeness and our spirit. I was talking about this Sunday on Facebook Live. We're unstoppable, you know?
Yeah.
And for us, like you said, we, even though hierarchical structure, there were glass ceilings, but our parents did not teach us about that glass ceiling. We didn't see one, you know? My mother right. always said that I was just as good as my white counterparts. And so when I mm-hmm. went into Wall Street and into college, that was the mindset I have. And the empowerment, as you're saying, you know, just for being on the show tonight, to stress that we're here to empower women, you know, those
yes,
that
definitely.
Didn't get a good image, you know, and mm-hmm. Who are struggling with the self-esteem. Talk about love just a little bit more deeper. You want to get into, like, the three types of love? The agape
well, actually,
love.
We can go into that. But before we go into that, I wanted to bring up something that you said about that sponge. About so it's not just about our environment, but it's also because, like, you may not have been able to control those things that happened to you when you were younger growing up, right? But mm-hmm. as an adult or a young person, yes. you can control the influence that you allow into your life now.
Yes.
So just like you said, like if you're listening to a lot of those reality TV shows where the women are calling each other outside their names, where there's no
right.
sense of community between those women, or you're listening to music where women are called outside of their names and are
right.
used in that music as just sex toys or sexual opportunities mm-hmm. without a ring. Those
right.
things, you know, like music, it's a very powerful tool. And it
yes,
can
it
seep
is.
Into your heart and it can seep into your mind. And then next thing you know, you are acting just as those people that you see on TV who are
wow.
getting paid to do the things that they're doing. And those musicians who are getting paid and making a living off of that, while you're struggling and you're letting those seeds of confusion or a lack of empowerment really get into your heart. And so really paying attention to
yes.
what you're surrounding yourself in, what you are
right.
allowing your soul to breathe in and to live in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the Bible says that you can't serve two masters. You've got
right.
to make up your mind. Like, you've got to turn mm-hmm. on that spirit of love, and you've got to turn to
yes.
that person who has loved you unconditionally, and that's Christ. And so when we talk
right.
about that, that's the first love that we need to connect with,
yes.
and that's the love of God who created us.
Yes. Right.
And understand that he died for us, and so we're worth something.
Oh,
because
yeah.
he loved us unconditionally, and he gave his son to die for us. And so that's the first opportunity that we get to really understand who we are as women. We are loved.
See?
We are nurtured. We are protected. And we are guided by him and through him. And so we can really get to know that relationship, like fall in love with Jesus, you know, spend
See?
Some time with him. Reading his word
right.
and getting to know who he is and who he is in our lives and learn what that love is and soak in that love. Because his love is not like the love of your mother. It's not like the love of your siblings. It's not like the love of your father, which as good as they are, it's imperfect.
Right.
You know, there's going to be flaws in it, but his love is perfect.
Wow. Wow. That is powerful. I mean, well said. His love is perfect. My goodness, this is good, Sharon. I mean, I'm looking at the time, and we just have a few more minutes, but this is, oh, my God. For those, you know, you are a powerful influencer in the city of Philadelphia, and I'm listening to you, and, you know, I just want to let the audience know that just as she is talking to you, that is how humble she is, beautiful on the inside and on the outside, but have a great spirit, very submissive, you know, just doing some marvelous things in Philadelphia. And, you know, Sharon, just give them your information if they want to reach out to you, you know, just for some more empowerment.
So definitely, if you want to reach out to me just to have a conversation, if you're struggling, if you're looking for some guidance or just looking for somebody to talk to or somebody to pray with you, I'm definitely available. And just to let you know, like when I'm talking to you, the first thing I'm doing is talking to myself. When I'm talking to somebody else, I see myself in them. I go through the struggles. I go through my moments of imperfection. I say stuff out my mouth that I shouldn't be saying. You know, so I am by far not perfect. But what I am is I am having that daily walk in which I am really paying attention to who I am as a person and reflecting on myself and perfecting myself. It's a journey. It's a process. So if you want to, you know, have a conversation with me, please reach out. My name is Sharon Mullins-Nielsen, and my number is 215-868-1661. You can text me. If you text me first and you tell me the background of what you want to talk to me about, it'll be better, because if you just call me, you know what's going on now with a whole lot of these calls that from people that you've never heard of selling you this and selling you that. So I don't really answer the phone if I don't recognize the number. So text me first and just say, hey, I heard you on Morel Brown radio, and I really want to get in touch with you. Can you call me back? And, you know, that's fine. You can also email me at S as in Sharon, R as in Ruth, Nielsen, N-E-I-L-S-O-N, at Verizon.net. That's S as in Sharon, R as in Ruth, Nielsen, N-E-I-L-S-O-N, at Verizon.net.
Well, thank you so much. I do appreciate it. Sharon, we're definitely going to have you back, you know, perhaps to continue the conversation. I just believe that, yeah, 1 month is not enough to really even delve into, you know, the female. It's really not, you know. And you know what? Hey, we break the glass ceiling, so we can go to 2 months or 3 months or whatever the case is. What I would like to do, because I know that, you know, you've taken out this time out of your busy schedule, and I want to open up the lines, Dr. Ron.
Yes.
So that
before you do that, if Coach Sharon and Coach Morel, if I could, this is Reverend Ron, Coach Sharon, if I can just divert a little bit, because I heard Coach Sharon said that y'all walked each other home, and I'm just picturing it, you know, it's in my head, you know me, Sharon, I'm always connecting the dots, so I'm seeing this picture. Good night, Morel. See you later. Kiss, kiss. Then I see somebody walking on the other door. Good night, Sharon. I see you later. Kiss, kiss. Now, if your brother didn't come, I just want to ask y'all, if your brother didn't come, how long this went on?
Woo!
Sharon, it's so cute. It is so cute.
So we had a middle we had a middle ground, like in the middle of these projects. And so if the brothers didn't come, we left from that middle ground, and she went her way and I went my way.
Oh, okay, okay. Because I'm, you know, Sharon, I'm just the way you said it, and I'm like, okay. They went home, and she walked her home, and then she walked her back home, and then she walked her home. And then the brother came and said, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Y'all better go. it's
they
so cute. It is so cute.
Y'all don't stop saying good night. My goodness.
I'm telling you, it is so cute.
Oh,
I can just
imagine.
Tell you, beautiful, beautiful. I just can't imagine, you know what I'm saying? And when Sharon said it, I'm like, You know, because you know me, I'm, you know, Sharon, I'm very intellectual. Well, what do they call that word? I'm always connecting the dots, trying to
visual.
Get something in my head. So I'm saying, okay,
yeah.
Okay, she said bye to her, and then she said bye to her, and they both walk each other home now, and they went back, you know. So being an old man, you know, we think things over, but it was just so cute. I thought that was the most cutest thing.
I'm just
imagining all of this. Good night. See you later.
Thank you.
Good
Our
night,
brothers didn't think it was cute, but thank you.
Right. They didn't think it was cute. You know what I mean?
That
would be my nephew, you know? Yeah. They were like,
what that song says, it's so nice to have a man around to tell you when to go home.
Yes.
Yes. Oh yeah!
You know,
oh yeah! They were good
it's
for
wonderful.
It.
It's wonderful. That is just so cute. Y'all just a beautiful
Thank
thing that I mean, I would love to make that into a comedy sketch. You know, but I thought that was wonderful. I thought it was wonderful, and the way Sharon said it so sincerely. You know,
right?
We used to walk each other home, and then I went home. And then Morale said, "Well, you know, let's not talk about that because we ain't never got home." I'm just kidding, y'all. I'm just kidding.
Oh,
but I thought that
no,
was
no.
cute. That was just a wonderful friendship, and just a love.
Yeah.
You know, and that's sort of the difference between mm-hmm. brothers and sisters. You know, brother be like, "Yo, I see you later, man. No, I can't do this."
Right.
You know, my mama calling me. You know,
right.
trying to get them collard greens and black eyed peas. You know.
Oh,
but that was cute.
Goodness.
I thought that was wonderful. That was wonderful of y'all.
No, you making me laugh.
No, it was beautiful. I thought it was just, you know, how women are. You know, women are very concerned about one another, so they stay up all night walking each other back and forth. You know, I'm just telling you, you know. Sharon, don't mind me. I'm crazy, Sharon. I'm from South Carolina, picking all that cotton. You know that.
That's my brother Ron. You know.
I gotta explain myself to Sharon. You know how you know I get a little crazy. You know.
Yeah, we could go for hours, brother Ron and I. You know. Yes. Well,
that's
Sharon,
wonderful. That's
wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now you So, Brother Ron, is it okay if we open up the lines only because she has to leave it?
Yeah, we have text mm-hmm. messages actually on the line as well. And
okay, great.
Okay. All right. We have Cheryl Sterling from Mississippi, and she wants to know, Sharon, in today's society with so much systemic racism and things of that nature, she's saying that women usually understand, like if you go into a corporate world and, you know, you have to look a certain way, dress a certain way. And a lot of times if you're, you know, she's saying, I guess you're a little hefty sister, you know, you're really not considered as corporate material. She wants to know how you differentiate between that which is systemic racism and that which is sexism when a person is looking for, you know, a little petite, really sexy model looking type as opposed to, you know, a little heavier sister. How do you tell the difference?
I don't really think that it's a matter of telling the difference. I think it's a matter of, because it's going to feel the same. It's going to feel like something is being done that's not just, you know, that's not right, you know, and that's at the heart of either one of those issues. Racism or sexism, it is a prejudice against or bias against somebody because of different factors. And so for me, it's not about what is the stem of it. The stem sometimes is about hate. Sometimes mm-hmm. the stem is about ignorance. Sometimes it's the root of it is about their culture and how they were raised. But what's important is how are you going to respond to it? And that's where that self-love comes from, that big size or little size that you – know who you are, you know what you bring to the table, you know what your self-worth is,
mm-hmm.
and also creating opportunities for yourself and for other women just to sit and talk about and strategize about different
mm-hmm.
things that they can do to approach that work differently. You know, unfortunately, we may not be able to solve all of the world's ills, you know? We may not be able to, transform this world. It's going to take really the influences of those who are coming behind us also to build that world a little bit differently also. And just creating for yourself, like having a conversation with other women that you know who are plus size or who have low self-esteem. We, you know, as women, we have a lot of baggage that we carry around with us, whether it's how dark our skin is, and some people who are thin are, you know, or feel some kind of way about their bodies. Their mm-hmm. nose, the thickness of their nose, or the thinness of their lips, or what have you. There's a lot of things that we really take on that we have to learn to let go of and really learn to love who we are and lean into our strengths. And so if yes. we do that, then we will find that, you know, we will see the world a little bit differently, mm-hmm. I think, and also present ourselves in the world a little bit differently. And I think that's really important. When you love yourself, you're not going to allow anybody to misuse you. You're not going to allow anybody to hurt you in a way that's, you know, damaging to who you are, because you have the love for yourself and you know what love looks mm-hmm. like, what love feels like, and you reject anything that's not that.
Wow, that was powerful.
Great, great, great. We have Marilyn Gooden from Sugar Land, Texas. She wants to know, in terms of, like, you spoke about the music, you talk about the culture. There's a generation, she said there's a Z generation or generation, cancel mm-hmm. generation or whatever they call it, or G. Mm-hmm. she forgot the letters that they call them. But she's her question is, in terms of the different generations of women and young women coming mm-hmm. up today, through all the diversity, all the problems, all the social ills, the music, the environment, the misogyny that you see a lot on the news, she's saying, how do a mother of a 13-year-old mm-hmm. female guide her, you know, through all the different influences? Because sometimes you can teach your children at home, and I guess she's saying that when they get, you know, into school and different environments, they pick up certain habits.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so my answer to this is kind of twofold. I've raised 5 children, 4 girls and 1 boy. And one of the things that you have to do from the time, like we said, that hand that rocks that cradle, you have got to create for your child that world that they're going to, from the age of birth until they are 18 and out of your house. You have got to, you know how for COVID now they talk about this bubble that you have to create for yourself? That's the bubble that you have to create for your child growing up. You have to ensure that the influences that you're going to have around your child, boy or girl, that they are modeling the same things that you yourself, your core values. So definitely mm-hmm. it's about church, right? It's about making sure that they're being raised in a church that's active for young people. And if you can't find a church that has somebody who is engaged in activities for youth, then you be that person. You gather some youth up. Have this conversation just like I'm having now. And it's not just about throwing them scriptures. It's about really about talking to them, about having a conversation and using some of the stories, putting it in the context for your own life and having them understand what that looks like. You know, they're not interested in the Paul who was on his way to Damascus and got blinded. But you can talk about the situations in your life that blinded you and that you had to seek God's help and you had to seek God's guidance to get yourself out of it. And those are the stories that she'll carry with her. But here's the thing that we have to understand as parents. As parents, we're raising children to let them go. At some point, we've got to trust that we've done our due diligence, that we have raised them according to how God has given us the wisdom to do so, and then we've got to let them go to make those choices and make those decisions and walk their path. And you just continue to pray. You continue to let her know that you love her or him unconditionally. There is nothing that will separate you from loving them. There's nothing that they can do and that will impact your love. You may be disappointed in them. You may be disappointed in their actions. You may be disappointed in what they do, but you will always love them for who they are.
Great, great, great. Here's a question from a gentleman, Robert Anderson, holla from my neck of the woods, Beaufort, South Carolina. He wants to know, in terms of today, it's difficult and knowing, you know, you see a nice young lady, and he's 65 years old, and he's single. I hope he's not trying. Maybe he's trying to mingle. I don't know. But he's saying that back in the day, you know, you could compliment a young lady on a, you know, nice-looking dress, nice hair, things of this sort. And he says now it's very difficult because women consider, mm-hmm. you know, a man approaching them. Sometimes some women consider it to be abusive or, you know, violating whatever rights, you know, that they have, mm-hmm. you know, or being too sexually intimidating, you know. Mm-hmm. So he's saying, like, how do a man know if you have an idea, what is the proper way if you see a young lady and you have an interest in her, or if you see a young lady, you think, you know, she looks nice. And, chivalry, I guess he said, is chivalry still alive? Open doors, you know, address women and try to compliment them as well. So he wants to know, is that a good thing to do today, or should you just not do it at all?
I really think that depends on the person. You know, you're going to have to be okay with giving a compliment and having it not being okay with that person and just apologizing for it until you get the person who just says, thank you very much. You know, you could say, you know, you have a beautiful smile instead of talking about the dress or the way she might dress. Just say, you know, like, I really like the way your eyes light up when you smile. Just complimenting, you know, that. Until you can get to a deeper relationship, because it is about building that relationship with that person where you get to be comfortable with saying things like complimenting the style of dress that they may have or, you know, or something like that. So it's about building that relationship. But it's also about understanding that, you know, we as women, you know, we come with the issues just as anybody else comes with that issue. And so don't take it personal. When somebody, you know, is a little gruff with you or says, you know, just apologize and say, I'm sorry, I've meant no offense. I just meant to say to you that you look really nice today and have a good day. Just keep it pleasant. But don't, like I said, don't soak it in. Don't let it discourage you from being who you are, because there are some women who appreciate men who open the door for them. Mm-hmm. There's some women who appreciate men who buy them flowers, who pay for a meal. There are women who still hold those kind of values that you hold. And there's some women who are independent, mm-hmm. who, you know, who don't appreciate it as much.
Okay, thank you. Another good question from another young gentleman, Jamal Joyner from Harlem, New York. He wants to know, as a young black man, there's a lot of negativity out there. And when he meets a nice young lady and he's introduced to her parents, because he loves hip hop, he's into hip hop, he's a rapper, and he feels that he's getting a bad rep because of the way he looks and because of the culture that he embraces, the music that he embraces, which you talked about as well tonight, about the music is very influential in one's mind. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying that he embraces that culture as a young black man. And he thinks it's unfair that he's being judged based on the way he dressed, based on the music that he likes. And he feels that, you know, when he's a nice young lady, he's trying to develop a relationship, the parents have a negativity towards him because of his image. How should he address that with the parents or the young lady, or how should he approach?
Jamal, you know, life is unfair, unfortunately. And, you know, there's a lot of judgments that's going on in our society, and that's the society that we live in. And just like I explained to the young lady, it's not going to change overnight. But just as when you're interviewing for a job, you dress the part so that your appearance fits the image that they want to have, that is the same thing that you're doing. If you love somebody, you met somebody that you're really interested in, and you're trying to impress their mm-hmm. family, then you have to present yourself in a way that's impressive until they reach the conversation or reach the part of the relationship in which they know that you're a good person, that they know that you're not a typical whatever that typical idea of stereotype that they have in their head, and that they understand that you care about their daughter, that you want the best for her. And as you begin to develop that relationship, then you can have those conversations. You can have this conversation once you guys have that relationship where you feel you created that that culture or that atmosphere of trust and honesty and transparency. You can have the conversation just like you're approaching me with it and just saying, you know, well, listen, this is the culture that I really want to. Hip hop is my it's what the gift that God has given me into this world, and talk to them about how they feel about different things that are stereotypical in other, in a lot of parents' minds about that hip hop culture. But I also want you to challenge yourself too, that this is not just a one-sided conversation, and this is not just a one-sided learning opportunity. This thing that you can learn with talking to the parents or that older generation about music too. You know, there is enough, I think, negative things in the world today. And so the opportunity that you have to use your gift to promote positivity in a way that everybody can listen to, I think is another thing, you know, that we need to take in consideration. Because if you do get married, whether it's to this young lady or somebody else, and you have children of your own and you have a daughter, think about it. Like the music that you're listening to, would you have her listen to music in which she's being called a B at the age of 2, 3, or 4, or 5? And if that's not okay, then why is it okay for her to listen to that music at the age of 18 and to be called a B? So I think you have to challenge yourself not just to think about music as the gift, but also think about the message that you're putting into that music. I hope
great,
that was helpful.
Great, great, great. Okay, we got also from Diane D. She didn't give the last name, but Diane D. And she hails from Hallelujah, Mississippi, I believe that's how it's pronounced. And she's saying that she is a full-figured sister who dresses, mm-hmm. you know, she says she dresses the way she feel. And she said there's a performer out there now called Lizzo, I think L-I-Z-Z-O. Mm-hmm. And she mm-hmm. says she was fighting against body shaming. And everybody right. was calling her all kinds of sluts and whatnot, you know. But she said she was fighting body shaming and she felt empowered by her, because she felt that she could embrace her full figure. But when everybody turned against Lizzo and was calling her all kind of sluts and whatnot, because she was mm-hmm. trying to show them about body shaming is not good for or healthy mentally for a full-size figured sister. And she wants to know, what is your feeling about body shaming and Lizzo and her approach to, you know, the body shaming people? She was trying to fight against them, I guess, by coming out with very sexy things and things of that sort.
Yes, yeah, so thank you, Diane, for your question. So I think that the whole idea of the body shaming issue is a problem. It's this bullying that's going on in, you know, our society. If somebody doesn't look like us or somebody doesn't present themselves like us, then immediately what we want to do is be mean. And I find that, you know, a lot of times it is, you know, women against women with the cattiness. And not that men don't do it, but it's the way that we set ourselves up against each other is not healthy, right? So we need to reject that in any form, any shape of it. It's wrong. On the other hand, we also, you know, for me, life is about balances too, right? So it's also about how you present your body. It's about how you present your body to other people. So it's not necessarily that I would caution on the ear of conservatism. But I'm very much aware of how I present myself in the world and how I present myself to others. And I am aware of other people's weaknesses and other people's tendencies. And I try to frame who I am and frame how I dress with those things in mind. So it's not that, you know, like for me, we had an issue in the church that I was growing up in about women wearing pants. So it's not the issue for me about whether women are wearing pants. It's not for me to say that you can't look good in a nice fitted pants because you're big, you're a woman of size. But it's about if you're wearing a shirt and you constantly have to close it up because you feel like you're revealing too much or you feel that it's uncomfortable, then you have to look at that within yourself. But it's not about body shaming. It's about what you're comfortable with as a woman and what you're comfortable with your body. But don't allow anybody to shame you. Don't allow anybody to make you feel like you're less than, that you're not worthy. Because whether you're full figured or whether you're a slender person, your body should be something that you see is a temple. It's a temple that God has created, and it's a temple in which he lives. And you, as a person who owns that temple, has to maintain it and has to upkeep it. So to me, Lizzo, I don't think, you know, what has happened to her was fair. I think there was the things that were just absolutely mean-spirited, that were just hateful. But I think in things that she has done went a little bit too far, in my opinion. But like I said, that's not for me to say that, that's not me excusing or justifying the pushback that she got in society. And I definitely appreciate her stance as a woman who is a plus size woman. I applaud her strength. I applaud her voice. I think she's using it for a good platform. I just think for me, it's a balance of making sure that because you're upset with somebody, that you don't take it all the way over to the other side, to the extreme side, but learning how to balance your right to stand up for those you feel that have been marginalized or judged. I hope that helps, Diane.
Great, great. This one here says, he's not saying his name, he's the title he's using, A Brother of Means. I guess that means he's wealthy. He's married to a white woman. He said he's tired of all these sisters coming to him, badgering him about being married to a white woman like he turned against them. And he's saying, why didn't it act right in the beginning? He'd probably still be with them. And his question to you is, why are sisters so upset because he chooses, or any brother chooses, a white woman over a black woman? That's his choice. So why are they upset with him?
Whew. So this is a loaded one, my brother with me. because this is at the core of how women need that the affection and the support of our black brothers. So I think that is at the heart of this question, especially when you said if they acted right, if black women acted right, then you still be with us. So that little phrase that you put in there speaks volume as to where that resentment that a lot of sisters have with men who choose to marry or fall in love with white women. And I think that, you know, you can look back to the classic history of slavery and the things that it did to women's psyche. I mean, we were breeders, you know, it was hard on both parties. It was hard on black men. It was hard on black women to be raped and to see their men torn from them and see their children spread out all over the U.S., and that did a lot for us as people, and it affected women and affected men differently. And so when you're when we're in this discussion about love, there are a lot of women who are going through that pain of rejection, who feel very rejected by their counterparts, their black men in their lives. They feel rejected by their father who may have been absent in their life, and so that male presence is really a trigger for them. And so when we black men who are making conscious choices to love white women, that is going to be a trigger for a lot of women. It is. It's not fair to you as a black man. I do believe that, you know, as human beings, that we're all human and should be free to love who we love. But I'm just saying that you have to take in context the specifics of our history as a people when it comes to not just white women, but also white men. And so for us, it is a trigger. It is some baggage along with that. There is some tension along with that relationship. And don't dismiss us. Don't write us off as unlovable or whatever. Just understand the history. Understand the shoulders that you stand. You stand on the shoulders of your mother and her grandmother and the grandmothers who came before you, who were impacted by the many decisions that were made and the many things that happened to us as a people. And so that's the context in which we view men, for some women who view men who are dating and loving outside of their race. And I apologize mm-hmm. that you feel some kind of way about it. And I apologize if sisters have made you feel some kind of way mm-hmm. about it. So I'm apologizing for that, but I just want you to understand the context in which we are looking at it as women, black women specifically.
Well, now you got a you got a debate on your hands, Sharon. Sister of means is responding, and she's saying she's a sister of means, I guess same mm-hmm. category. Maybe she has whatever, and she said she chose a white man over a black mm-hmm. man because of the way they mm-hmm. behave. And she says she's tired of them judging her like she's supposed to be in some kind of particular way or means of inhabitant to their needs. You know what I'm saying? Like she have mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. act the way they want. Like she's not there. She's saying she's not their robot. She don't have to, you know, come to their beck and call. She don't have to act the way they want her to act. If they mm-hmm. do something negative to her, she's going to respond back to them. And, she's not interested in being judged. She's not interested in being titled by nobody. And she chose a white man over a black man because the same reason she said Mr. Means chose a white woman because of their behavior or whatever behavior she had. She had bad, in other words, I guess she's saying she had bad black men. And
right.
if they would behave
right.
better, she would be with them as well. But she's not with them because of their behavior. And she want Mr. Man of Means to understand that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Mm-hmm. There you go, Sharon.
Okay. yeah. So I just want to say, Sister of Means, that the same thing that I said to the Brother of Means is the same thing I'm going to say to you, mm-hmm. Sister of Means, right, is our history. But what we can't afford to do is want to make broad generalization, because men and women, we have a tendency to say all men, or we have a tendency to say all women, mm-hmm. and that's not true. In every race, you're going to have those men who are manipulative, those men who are arrogant, those men who are dismissive, mm-hmm. and you're going to have in any race, you're going to have the women who are stubborn, who are angry, mm-hmm. who are hostile. It's every single mm-hmm. race. But to reject a race or reject a culture because you run into some bad ones, I think is doing a disservice to who we are as a people. And while it might have been your experience that you've had a lot of relationships that did not go too well, or a lot of relations that you felt were not supportive when you dated the black man, and for you, Mr. Man of Means, when you dated the black woman, that relationship didn't work, did not mean that there was not somebody out there who could have loved you or you could have loved as you are in that relationship that you're in now with the white woman and the white man. So I really want us to be very careful about how we view that, because the children that you have from that union will be considered children of color. They will be biracial, but society will look at them as men and women of color. And you want to, as much as possible, affirm who we are as a people to them so that they have a strong understanding and a strong respect and a strong connection to their culture, to that foundation, to the history of a dynamic set of people. When you look at the 200 years of just horrific abuse and violence that we survived, and the Jim Crow years and the Civil Rights years, when you look at who we are as a people, you see the resilience of who we are. You know, you see the history that we're making, our contribution to society. We are an amazing group of people mm-hmm. comprised of people who may be mm-hmm. broken, who may be who may need healing, who may need love. So just a little bit of understanding and a little bit of not coloring us all on the same brush, I think, is needed.
Great, great. There's Sister Sister Carol Smith from New York City, New York. She said that she is light-skinned, model-type looking. She works in corporate America in Manhattan. She have excelled in all of her divisions of her corporation. Dark-skinned sisters are hating on her because they say she's a white woman type looking, and maybe she's laying on her back to get these positions. She wants to know why dark-skinned women still hate, and she's 45 years old, she mentioned in here, and she's saying, why do dark-skinned women still hating on light-skinned women when she can't help but who God created her the way she is?
Yeah, Sister Carol, there's that colorism that runs thick in society, in us as a people. And it's that history of being pitted against that dark skinned women and white skin and light skinned women were made to feel that they were in competition with each other. We were made to feel as dark-skinned women that the light-skinned women had the privilege to there's always been a glass ceiling, right? But there's been the feeling or the notion of that the ceiling is different from higher colored black people than it is for darker skinned people. And that is an issue. It's not your fault. It's just as wrong as the racism that sets a prejudice towards you because of things that you have no control over. It's not your fault, but to understand the context, like I said, understand the context of where it's coming from, understanding the history of where it's coming from, and these are the things that run deep. And it's perpetuated by within households where you have different children who have different complexions who are finding that the lighter skinned children in the family are treated better than the dark skinned children in the family. Fortunately, it's the negative things that we've carried on and we have kept it going within our family. And you could break the cycle by having that conversation with them, gathering up some of your sister friends and just talking about colorism and how it impacts you. Mm-hmm. But you have to understand that this is really a deep and systematic issue for us. And like I said, it's not going to go away, but it can start with a conversation, and you're going to have to let some people go who are going to feel that way about you. There's nothing that you can do but continue to pray for them and continue to excel and continue to exceed and continue to push down those glass barriers, but pull some people up with you, some darker skinned women with you. If you have the influence to allow them to get some of the opportunities that were given to you, then by every means possible, reach back and pull up some women with you and help them to get to the platform that may be denied them because of some prejudices that happen.
Great, great. Well, we're on the other side of the hour now. Sharon, you just done a wonderful job. And Coach Sharon, Can I call you Coach Sharon? Can I call you Coach Sharon?
Because you are Coach. You can.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Coach Sharon and Coach Morrell, we're at the other side of the hour.
Yeah.
It's time for a little commercial break. And I'm going to do the public service announcement, if you don't mind, Coach Morrell.
Absolutely. Let me just say bye to my good friend, my sister. Oh, my God. Job well done. I just believe that this was a very pivotal moment in history, and we were able to delve into, the core, of racism and how it tends to go from one generation to another, and to realize that we, and I'll just throw this out there, we're not a cursed people. As you said, we just need to really sit and look at history and see who has, in a sense, caused the trouble, but from a strength perspective to say, now how can we sit and have the challenging conversations so that we can understand each other, rather it's sexism, racism, classism, anything like that. Okay, let's learn from the past so that we won't repeat the same problems in relationships, you know, regardless of, you know, if it's your coworker, you know, your girlfriend or your parent, and to make changes. And that starts with us. So thank you so much for your time, your expertise.
Amen.
Please give Mrs. Sharon Mullings-Nielsen a call, you know, or email her. And a wonderful individual. And Dr. Ron, thank you.
You.
Take it away. You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Coach Sharon and Coach Morrell. I'm 70 years old. Y'all know that. Y'all didn't know that because I ain't told you. But I told you. I'm just kidding. And I'm from South Carolina, Coach Sharon. And I experienced, you know, I've been colored. I've been Negro. I've been the black. Mm-hmm. And I've been that black American, the African American, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Picked cotton, went through all the Jim Crow and everything. And you have been so helpful to me. A lot of the stuff that you have said, you know, I find some of these, you know, I it's an anger in me. You know, when they say the old angry black man syndrome, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
I have the old black man syndrome. And sometimes I got to catch myself because my grandkids are different. They're dating, you know, others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I might say something, and my grandson told me one day, he says, "Grandpa, that sounds racist to me," you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get on his tail with my belt. No, I'm just kidding, y'all. But, you know, it's a learning process. You know what I'm saying? It's truly a learning process. I'm a retired psychologist, and I thought I'd known a little something. But, you know, you and Coach Morrell just really opened my eyes to a lot of things, and I just want to thank both of y'all.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you for your transparency. Thank you for sharing that, because I think that's what we need. We need to have those honest conversations, amongst ourselves so that healing can happen and we can come together and truly celebrate our differences and let go of the past and just love and be who we are, who God intended us to be.
Amen.
Wow. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we're going to have you back.
Thank you.
Yes. Please look at your calendar. We're going to definitely have you back, you know. But,
no,
and maybe we should bring on Mr. Means and Mrs. Means.
Yeah, right.
Yes.
And let them debate. You know? Let Coach Sharon, coach them.
Right, right.
I'll try.
I know, right? Yes. Education and wanting to see different perspectives, you know, seeking to understand each other. That's important.
Yes.
It's important.
Not just to be understood, but also to
Even
understand.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we'll keep that in mind, Dr. Ron.
Okay,
great.
All right, guys.
Great.
I have to jump on another call, but thank you so much.
Thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
I'll
be praying for you both.
Thank you so much. I need it. Pray for me first. And stream around right now. I'm kidding.
Okay. My prayers at first will be last, though.
Okay. I know, right? So, Sharon, I'll talk to you, okay?
Okay. All right. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Well, basically, I want to just, if I can, Coach Morrell, just the public service announcement. I just want everybody to remind everybody that we're coming up to, I guess, they make a big deal about 100 days, you know. Everybody getting to the White House, and they keep saying, 100 days, after the 100 days, let's talk, you know. So we come up, I don't know if we passed his 100 days or 100 days are coming up, but I know, and I know a lot of things have happened, you know, unfortunately, you know, the shootings in Georgia and in Colorado, I pray for the families. I pray for the, you know, those who have been hurt and those who have passed. I pray for healing. I pray for understanding. And I pray that people, you know, there's a lot of, and you know this, of course, Morrell, there's a lot of mental health concerns in America that's not being addressed. And there's a lot of abusive people, and I'm going to call it like it is. To me, Trump is an abusive person. He abuses people's mentality. He abuses their desperateness. He abuses their ignorance. And instead of trying to be a catalyst of change, a man of understanding, a man of love, you know, in that position as president is so influential because you're sitting on a pedestal, And you know, even though it's not beyond Jesus, but to some people, it's beyond Jesus.
Yes.
And you
right.
have a responsibility. The Bible says that any people who take on a position of leadership over God's people, whether it's a church,
yes.
the police department, whether it's a mayor, a governor, a president, a senator, a congressman, they have a responsibility to God. So I want
yes,
all you
absolutely.
Politicians out there, I know a lot of politicians call in to this radio programs over the weeks, and they listen in because they want to, you know, want to get their vote on, you know. So
mm-hmm.
I want y'all to know that you have a responsibility. You know, I'm at the conclusion in my life right now, and the Bible says this, and God said it to us. He said, live a life pleasing unto me. Live
yes.
a life pleasing unto me. Live a life pleasing unto me, and I shall draw all men to me. Our job is to please God in our behavior,
yes.
in our way of living, just like Coach Sharon said, how
yes.
you dress, how you act, how you
mm-hmm.
extend love to others, how you treat others. And
right.
you know, and I know that sometimes somebody makes me very angry and I say something out of the way. Yes, I do. You know,
right.
with the reverend and everything. If you get me on a bad day,
mm-hmm.
you know, you coming, something is coming.
Right.
But you know something, Coach Morrell? God
yes.
convicts me, and I have to do something.
See?
Even with my little grandkids, I have to go back and say, you know, I'm so
right.
sorry. You know, and I have to heal, because the Bible says though
right.
those things might, though that person might have been wrong. Even the Bible says, do not drive a child to wrath. I'm not saying
right,
the exact
absolutely.
Scripture, but it means to take nobody to extreme anger where they do or say anything. Because the Bible says certain things that you say to a person is so hurtful, sometimes you can't take it back. And you don't want to get to that
right.
level,
mm-hmm.
especially, but, and this happens a lot of times in close relationships, brothers and sisters,
wow.
husbands and wives, uncles and aunties, you know, or just boyfriend and girlfriend.
Right.
You know, because you love somebody so much and they hurt you, and then you're trying to hurt them back, and don't let it go. Don't let it go tit for tat, tit for tat, tit for tat. Something that Mr. Me and Mrs. Mean did tonight, but you know, but I'm saying that, you know, it's so important that we live a life, please God, because once what I learned in my life, once you please Him, everything else falls into place. You don't have to worry about, you know, you got to fight this one, you got to say all these things. So. So I'm just saying in general context is that, you know, the Georgia situation and the
Colorado.
See how you get country? You can't say Colorado,
yes.
you know.
Right,
but
right.
Those two places that Coach Morrell said, it shows me the importance of love.
Mm.
Because the Bible
yes,
says love covers
yes.
a multitude of sin, and that means that when you show love, even a person can hate you, but they'll turn to love you. Because what God
true.
Said, what? He said, I'll make your enemy your footstool if you let
oh,
me
yes.
fight the battle. But if
true.
You're going to fight the battle, God's going to say, okay, now, you out there fighting,
mm-hmm.
so do your thing. But if you stop and let God, and how you stop and let God is you say, you know what, sister, brother, that's all right. God bless you.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know how to say God bless you, say it's all right. I don't want to get into that. And walk away.
Right.
You know, my father used to tell
yeah.
me, I love what he said, boy, he said, every war don't have to be fought. You got to choose your wars.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
True.
And when guys are big and stronger than me, I said, well, I ain't going to fight this war. No. I'm just kidding with y'all.
Yes.
But I'm saying that it shows me, because there's such a need to live a life and please God. I think if every man and woman would stop trying to please this one and that one,
mm-hmm.
Republican,
wow.
Democrat, rich, poor, white, black,
yes.
orange, green, whatever.
Mm.
If everybody just concentrate on doing that, whoever your God is, and I'm not telling you Jesus Christ, I'm not giving you no name. I'm talking about the Creator.
Right.
Whoever you call Him, Allah, Buddha, you know, Yahshua, whatever you feel, you know, because all in all complexity, it's all the same. It's about love
yes.
and about, you know, it's about
it
healing
about
and
how, exactly.
right, how can I make things better for others?
Mm.
So I'm just saying that, you know, it just showed me, because it was such a painful experience. It happens so often, and I've seen it so much growing up in my childhood during this, in the South, during all these riots with the KKK and stuff like that, but it never, right. it never stopped hurting you when you hear about people getting killed and so many young people getting killed and children. Yes, mm-hmm. And children are getting killed in the mix of all this innocent children, mm-hmm. and it hurts. You know, it hurts tremendously. Right. So I think if all of us can just try to, because everybody talks about, I don't do what nobody say. I don't have to, you know. So don't please nobody. Just please God and go on with your life. And I think, you know, that's the healing process for all of us, you know, at this point. So I just want to say that. Wow. But I also want to remind everybody that President Biden and Vice President Harris got a tremendous plan on taking this country to the next 30 years in natural solar energy. As you know, they're planning on 2032, 2033 mm-hmm. or something like that. They're going to have all electrical cars, and the purpose of it is to clean the ozone layer, and this layer, and all these layers. Yeah. You know, y'all know what it is. All you guys out there that's, you know, wise and science and whatnot.
Yes, we know.
So they're trying to change the environment. Mm. We live in a very polluted society. If you go to certain states in America, you will find a high level cardiovascular problems, asthma. You know, people got these machines around them, oxygen tanks and whatnot, because they can't breathe. Yeah. And all that's due to pollution. You look at, you go to some of the beaches in some states, just all the dirt and whatnot in the water. You know what I'm saying? Fishes are dying. So the fish, I know a lot of times they said last year, don't eat this fish, don't eat that fish, because it's contaminated, and if you eat it, you know you end up sick or whatever, what have you. So, and sometimes the vegetables and whatnot are being sprayed with all kinds of spray, and those sprays are toxic as well, and sometimes, you know, you can get sick from that. So we're living in a very intoxic environment, you know, and then we got the coronavirus and all that stuff. So I'm just saying that the plan is to try to clean up the environment. The plan is to try to develop the environment, and the plan is to really get everybody involved and participate. And the plan is to have everything recyclable. There's a young brother, mm-hmm. African American, who came up with an electrical car that's made totally out of hemp. The seats are hemp, but you would swear to God, you're sitting in the seats of a Rolls Royce. The leather is so beautiful. And the body is so tremendously, but that whole car can be recycled. There's no emissions. People don't realize this. Even batteries sends out emissions, not at the same level as gas, but it does send out emissions. This brother's car sends zero emissions because he has a special something called Nova powder. I think it's Nova powder inside the batteries, and it doesn't sound no emissions. So it's his product is wanted by Elon Musk, is wanted by the government. Everybody wants his idea because it's going to be such a tremendous resolution to the problems in America with the pollution. So we know that I keep telling you that $2.3 trillion is going into the economic development of all this stuff. You know, they're going to go into the communities. They're going into the universities. They want to get the young people to be trained academically in this, whether it's associates, bachelors, a master's, or a PhD, whatever, you know, in different levels, scientists, architects, designers, you know, people of that sort, scientific people, people that can work in laboratories to produce certain kind of products. So they're going into these universities, and they're going to give kids a full range, I know at least from associates to a master's, if you study this particular subject matter, which is clean energy. And so they're going to put $2.3 trillion into this whole development. They're going into communities, and they're going to teach the people in projects and things of that sort how to have – there's a guy, it was so surprising to me, he plant vegetables on a roof of an apartment building, and the way he's doing it is like he has this pole, and this pole has this growth potential in it where he watered the plants and the vegetables, and they grow. I don't know how to explain it. I'm not that technologically advanced, but this is what they're planning on doing, having, you know, natural foods, organic foods grown on roofs of apartment buildings. They want to change that environment as well. They want to change it from intoxic foods to organic, clean food. They want to go into the area. That would mean money will go into rebuilding after school programs, pre-K programs, okay? Because all this stuff is to teach what? Our communities and our citizens to be mindful of clean energy and clean air. So there's a brother, Mr. Williams, that studied this for 40 years. And he has a website where there's a petition that we all can sign that telling the government we want to make sure that they bring these opportunities to the black and Hispanic minority communities, that we get opportunity, like the poor communities as well, get an opportunity to get this money to develop the projects, to clean up the parks, clean up the streets. You know what I'm saying? When you live in a community that's clean, when we eradicate poverty and hunger and drugs and alcohol, when the community is beautified, when you have homes not empty no more, but you know when you have a dilapidated building, when you have a building that's empty, nobody lives there, and it's all falling apart, it gravitates for criminality. You know, people going to go in there and sell crack, or you know, become, you know, I hear a lot of people say, in Mount Vernon where my office is at, I hear people say, oh, that's a crack house. You know, it's an empty building in a bad area.
Right.
But when people move in there and fix those houses up and beautify the lawn and the grass and everything, those people that normally have that mentality do not go into those beautiful environments to have their crack homes or whatever, because they know what? There's no potential client for what they're doing.
Right.
So it's important that we clean up the neighborhoods. There's a lot of good people in the projects. You know, a lot of people want to have a safe environment for their kids to go and come. A lot of, you know, I remember back in the days, the projects used to have this big community center where people used to rent it sometimes or get access to it for a birthday party, or there were women that would do community stuff and they would have the little children come in and throw parties and, you know, introduce them to different things. I remember we used to have a ping pong table and used to have television. You used to have, you know, academics going on. So we can change the environment by changing people's behavior. So this money is going to be a good potential to change the communities. So we want you to go to a positive, P-O-S-I-T-I-V-E, change, C-H-A-N-G-E, P like Peter, C like Cat, .com. PositiveChangePC.com. Go to the website. Read about the clean energy bill. Read about how the money's coming in and what they're going to be doing. Also, learn about clean energy. This brother spent years studying this, and he gives you a tremendous geographical and a biological and all and understanding of what it means. What is clean energy and what it does to the when they said, you know, that certain ozone layers are being contaminated. What does that mean to you? Why are you thinking people are traveling all these different? You know, now these astronauts, you know, these ships that fly up into the sky and people can go up there and vacation now. They're planning on people who want to go high as they can go to get a cleaner level of energy. So we want you to stay aware of that. We want you to go to the website and get involved. Also, we want to give you, we want to let you know that jobs. We have a lot of jobs. People have been hired today. Mrs. Helena Owens is hiring.
Excellent.
You call 718-504-6861, 718-504-6861, 718-504-6861. Let me tell you a little secret. Since they're not on, I don't see them around. I'm talking about my family now. All them little begging nephews and nieces. and cousins, you know, because in down South Carolina, everybody your cousin. It could be 10 times down the road, they're your cousin. All of them, I sent them to Mrs. Helena Owens, 718-504-6861, and I said, y'all call her, $20 an hour, go get you a job. Lord Jesus, Costa Morale, ain't nobody been calling me since. Thank you, Jesus. And that's what you, and people, there's 100 jobs more left over. So they need lots of people. They need drivers.
Okay.
They need canvassers. Mm-hmm. They need people to sit down on the computer and do data entry. They need people on telemarketing, on the telephone, okay? Different, you know, some jobs pay 23, some jobs pay 25, some jobs pay 15, some jobs pay $20 an hour. Mm-hmm. The minimum a week people say they're taking home is $560. It's a start. It's a start. Yeah. And there's overtime and time and a half. So, you know, take advantage of this, people. Take advantage of it. I don't know where you can, and you could be 18 years old with no job experience whatsoever and start at $20 an hour or $15 an hour based on which job you take, okay?
That's
you can
good.
You could just now this minute, today, you can just came out of Rackers with a felony conviction, and she will hire you as long as you're honest, as long as you want to work. And the only requirements are, well, in her position, with the canvassing, is that you can walk and you have a cell phone. Those are the only two requirements. So you can have no high school diploma. They will hire you. Okay? You can be a mother with children. They will hire you because you can work the hours that you want to work, and you can also work away. You got to talk to Helen about this, that you can work from home. So they're trying their best, brothers, to put everybody to work. If you didn't get your stimulus, if you did get your stimulus, this is a perfect stimulus for us. And this gentleman is trying to get this into our community, get these jobs in the community. Because one thing Helen said when she was on the show with Coach Morrell, she said, you know what? And it's true. Once you're out there and you're working, it motivates you. It gets you into the environment where what happens? You're listening to people talk, and you're hearing about other things that are going on in the community, hearing about other things going on financially. You're hearing about other opportunities.
Right.
And this company, they're looking for career-minded people. They're looking for you to become a supervisor, a manager. They're looking to lift you up to the next position. And you, and we all know if the minimum is 20. So when you become a supervisor or a manager, y'all can know what kind of salary that looks like, right? So, this is a great opportunity.
Yes.
I admonish everybody, you know, stop complaining and take charge. The opportunity has been given to you. You know what I'm saying? Coach Morrell had Sister Helena Owens on her show. She talked extensively about she wants people. She wanted that last week she wanted 150. Now they're down to 100. You know, they need people. And the work they're letting you work at your own pace. They're letting you work at your it's like you can work part-time, you work full-time, you work night, you can work day. You can work night and day. And overtime is $35 an hour. So my sister, my brother, I'm just Morrell, I'm just saying it because this is a great opportunity for somebody that's been really hurt by the pandemic. Everybody's been my business slowed down tremendously because of the pandemic.
Okay.
And I know when I see these restaurants close and when they're struggling to pay rent, pay salaries, I got people working from home as well. They got their children there, so they can't work they can't work as good as they used to work. But I know them for a long time, and I know their love for the job they're doing. And so I allow, things, to get missing and things not happening. But this is this is the new world that we're living in. But I'm saying to everybody, here's an opportunity that could change your life. Here's an opportunity that could really change your family's life. I mean, don't look at $20 an hour. I mean, hey, I picked cotton for 2 and 3 cents. It wasn't that cheap, but it was almost near that.
Right, and it's much more than what some jobs here in North Carolina is paying,
Yes,
and you can have a master's degree
and
it'll pay you $12.
And the good thing, Coach Morrell, they're coming to North Carolina. They're coming to South Carolina. They're coming to Mississippi.
Right.
They're coming to they're expanding the direction of the company to come from the north to the south.
Good. Good.
They're going to be servicing all of the Democratic Party's political people. That when the political parties start running Congress, the Senate, the this, the that, they're going to have you're going to hear Dalton is going to be out there working with these campaigns.
All righty. Definitely let us know. You can have her back on, and pencil her in. And, she could even – matter of fact, I did hear from her. She can just call me direct,
Great. So I just want to say that, people, jump on it. Right, jump on it. And if you are in South Carolina, North Carolina, and different places, I still say give her a call. Because this way you got you got your foot in the door. And when they do come to your area – you already got your foot in the door, and I'm sure they'll hire you, you know, quicker than you can say
right.
Apple. But listen, people, that's an opportunity. Take advantage, please. You know, take advantage of it. I don't know what else to say. You know, take advantage of it. So, Sister Morrell, we now going to have our VP guest. We're going to have Mother Bertha Gillard. That's it, right?
Gillard.
Gaylord.
That was close.
Okay, it's not spelled the way it sounds, right?
Right, exactly. It looks like Gilliard.
Mother Gaylord, she is.
And you know, pronounced various ways. You know, depends on where, you know,
yes,
the plantation.
And that's the thing. I'm telling you, I swear to God, I have friends that got the same name.
Gaylord, Gilliard, you know.
Something else. Right. And you in South Carolina, you know, Gaylord, Gaylord, good Lord.
Right.
Come on over here, Gaylord, you know. You know, I'm just letting y'all know. Just, you know, because y'all know, everybody know I'm from South Carolina. I ain't going to say nothing right because that's my privilege. Because I'm from South Carolina. Y'all ain't from South Carolina. You ain't got a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it's so wonderful to have Mother Bertha here with us. And, you know, she's going to express some of the things that you and her are going to discuss, which are very important subject matters.
Thank you.
Prayer life, evangelism, and just being a mother, you know, is such a tremendous it's a tremendous job, you know. It's a tremendous job, and if any man ever stayed home with a little children like I did, you know it's a tremendous job.
Oh,
yes,
yes,
ma'am. So let's bring her on. Give her a nice welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
History maker, Mother Alberta Gaylord. Are you on?
Yes. Yes.
Well, it is such a pleasure to have you on. You want to say hi to the audience?
Hi. How are you? Beautiful show. Beautiful show.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I learned from the best. Yes. Thank you, Dr. Ron, and all those, again, that just helped to make this happen. You know, on this segment, Mom, you were able to listen in on the conversation. We were talking about just our upbringing and how you know, as well as Sharon's mom was able to, well, you know, you raised seven, you know, children in Brooklyn, New York. And Sharon's mom, I think there was like six of them, you know, as you know. And so I want to hit on parenting, you know, the female empowerment plus forgiveness. We end up, you know, a lot of the questions was concerning relationship, you know, in terms of race relationship, how you're treated, you know, how you depends on how you dress or how you're seen, if you're light-skinned, dark-skinned. And to me, what we really end up talking about it when it was all said and done is about how we can see each other and bring about forgiveness. And so that is what I wanted to just briefly talk about, you know, I just call it like the five strategies for forgiveness. And so let's just talk about, you know, you as a woman and how you were able to rear seven children, you know.
Well, really, I raised more than seven because I had grandkids that were living with me. You know?
Right. Okay. All right. True. True.
Taking care of them.
Let's talk about the kids first. Let's talk about the kids first, you know.
Okay.
Two boys and three girls in a four-bedroom apartment.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very hard. It wasn't easy, you know. But I survived, you know.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And I'm going to tell y'all how I survived just like I did before. Like I normally say, I always put God first, you know?
Yes.
And seek him out and see what he got to say. So a lot of times I would just put the children around the bedside and kneel them all by the bedside, which would be end up about 15 children at night, and teach them how to pray and what to pray for. So really, it wasn't no problem because most of the time they loved to pray and tell
10:30 at night when they want to go to bed. But I always say you have to pray first because this was the answer. And
right.
This is what my grandmother and grandfather teach me. Like Pastor Ron say, he from South Carolina. Well, I'm from South Carolina also.
All right,
yes.
Now.
You have to get up 6 o'clock in the morning before school and
yes,
go
ma'am.
Out there and water the garden and hold
yes,
the corn.
Ma'am.
Whatever they say do, you have to do. It wasn't
yes,
done
ma'am.
Now. You know,
and don't keep reminding
today,
me.
These kids tell you no in a minute.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know?
There you go. There you go.
If it was raining, we'd let the rain slack up a little bit and then go back out again. So
yes,
it
ma'am.
Wasn't easy. But one thing that we know that with all of this, we have to have manners.
Yes.
And sometimes it was hard for us to, you know, say something to those older people. They say something to us. Oh my goodness. Yeah. You couldn't do that.
Right.
Because
exactly.
If you move your lips and they saw your lips moving, that was a hit in the mouth.
There you,
know?
There you go.
Yeah.
My lips
yeah,
were closed.
Yeah. That's right.
Wow.
You can say,
I'm sorry,
I didn't do that. But I remember one time my grandmother, she said something to me, and I was trying to tell her how it was.
Right.
But she didn't say it that way. She thought the way she wanted to say it, and she said, I was talking back. Well, I got a hit. I got a lick right across my lip, you know. And later on, when I told her she made a mistake and heard me the wrong way, she didn't say, that's the way it is. That's the way I heard it, and that's the way it is. You can't tell me nothing.
True.
You can't tell me nothing. Today, if you just want to correct your children, they don't want you to I know better. Yeah, you might be older. You went to college. You graduated. But still, God had given me that mother wisdom.
Right.
That mother wisdom.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And
yes.
I want y'all to go to school. I want y'all to learn how to be somebody. You
right.
know?
Yes.
Right.
And that's what they did. But I
right.
have to raise it with the perfection of God.
Right.
And the perfection of God is listening not to me, but to God. What is God
Amen.
Telling you? What is God telling
right.
you? If God's
right.
telling you, don't go outside, well, I'm going to go. I'm gone.
Right.
You could go out there and something happened to you, and I didn't even know you go. You
right.
know?
Right. So and you know, Mother, they took the right away from the parents, too. I mean, you know, my 30-year-old and my 29-year-old, when they came up, it was very difficult to discipline them because – The school would call, you know, social services, and as well, you had to go to court if you beat your kids.
Yes,
so they even took it right from the parents to really discipline the kids. But when the kid does something wrong, who they come running to the first time? The parents, you know.
See,
right.
exactly.
Right, right.
If I may interject, I was just thinking, like, I'll say Mama Gaylord was saying, you know, in the past, the discipline, in some ways, it was good, but yet it could have been a little overboard because it was somewhat brought back from slavery where you didn't even hear the child, you know what I mean, or what they have to say, or value them as being a separate entity, you know, teaching them mm-hmm. how to have a conversation with you without being disrespectful. And but then you have the present, as you're saying, Dr. Ron, where parents, it's almost like their hands are tied. And, you know, I remember just, you know, working at CMS here in Charlotte as a substitute teacher for the past 5 years. And the young lady, the student is saying to me, you know, maybe out of class of 34, 17 was focused and the other 17 were just trying to run amok. But she said to me, Ms. Brown, why do you care so much? She says, they don't listen to their mother. They're not going to listen to you. And I said, you know what? I said, one, I'm going to put forth 100% to make sure that I'm going to manage the class, and then the class is going to learn from me. And I don't want 20 to 30 years from now, I'm sitting in my rocking chair, and I hear that somebody got killed in my class, and I didn't do what I can to coach them. But so they're under the impression that no one should be teaching because they don't listen at home. And I took a different approach, you know, because you know, my mother's bringing that in this class. know, there's Mama Brown that brought me up, and then there's also Morel Brown that's going to now help rear you and guide you.
So you're going to use both combinations, the left hook and the right hook. But let me say, you know what? We another thing that we don't talk about, Mother Gaylord and Coach Morel. Another thing we don't talk about is we live in a dysfunctional society, whether we know it or not.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So
we do.
You might have a good kids. Cause I've had, you know, I got great great grands. I got a lot of kids, and some of them are good. Some of them, you know, they need a little work. But I watched with my children, especially my younger children. I watched the people they bring home, the young people they hang around, the friends they hang with. I was in Connecticut. It's a big thing. My wife got into it. I didn't like it, but it's a big thing in Connecticut. All the girls go to one girl's home and stay. All the boys then go to this. If my daughter had a sleepover, then my son would go sleep over with another friend. And then when my daughter went to a sleepover, then my son's friend would come. So it's a big thing in Connecticut where everybody take care of the community children on Friday night until Sunday night. Okay.
Right.
I didn't like that whole structure because a lot of the kids, and mostly, you know, I'm not talking about, I'm not prejudiced or anything like that, but a lot of white kids came from very wealthy families where there was no structure.
Okay.
You know, because they were living in a maze and butlers and chauffeurs whom they can say, listen, if you don't do what I say, I hear the kid tell the chauffeur. The chauffeur said, come home. Your father told me to come pick you up. Look, I said, well, if you keep bothering me, I'm going to tell my daddy and you won't have a job. So this little girl, 5 years old, she knows to say that. Okay?
Yeah,
so the man is stepping back because he's scared to lose his job, as well as the nannies. And the other people that work for their father, because and the parents, these kids' parents, you know, these are men that head, you know, these big corporations in Manhattan, and they don't really have time to really listen to their children or have a family structure,
as well as
involved in all these other things, and so you find this dysfunctionality, and I'm just saying that we live in a very dysfunctional society. Then when you get to the kids who are poor, a lot of them have meticulous mental and medical concerns that their parents are not aware or not taking care of because of either lack of understanding or the lack of money or insurance. So there's a lot of stuff, you know, dysfunctional. We do have a call in, and maybe they want to ask Mother Gaylord something as well, you know.
Right.
I'm going to bring in 718-350. You're on the mic with Mother Gaylord.
Good evening, Mother Gaylord. Good evening, panel. How are you? My name is Ronald A. Robinson. And
Mother Gaylord, don't get him mixed up with me. I ain't got nothing to do with that.
Okay, how old are you, Brother Robinson? All right, Mom. Okay.
But when we were growing up, and my father is from Spartanburg, South Carolina. My mother's from Washington, D.C.
Okay.
When we were growing up, and we had a lot of support. my grandmother, my mother, my two mama, if you're Geechee, you know that, you know, there are a lot of people that were helping to raise us, you know, and then the block itself. If I did something in school, the block knew about it before I got out of school. I had too many people to beat my butt, you know, and so on. And I remember my mother would, didn't I tell you? Didn't I? I would tell her at one point, I told her, Mom, do one thing, beat me or talk. Don't do both.
That's cute.
You know, but and we raised, there was seven of us, but we helped raise 307 children.
Wow, that's powerful.
And some of them still didn't leave. Their spirits are still in the house here. You know, because we raised children whose mothers didn't know how to raise children. And this is in the 60s, the 70s, and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And as our family tradition is, these people became our extended family.
Wow.
And we raised the children of the children.
Oh.
You know, up until 1995.
Well, that's a good thing.
You know, and prayer, a lot of prayer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And even my dog helped raise some of the children. you know.
Wow.
All right, but there was a community, it was a community effort.
Yes.
Everybody knew Mrs. Robinson, and she was the first, when they needed a babysitter, the first thing they would say is Robinson. My mother started turning children away.
Yeah.
You know, and referring them to other people in the neighborhood, you know, that she knew that were good caregivers and loving people, you know, and so on. And that's how I don't see that anymore.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I don't see that. And she really raised a village.
Yes. Wow. That's powerful.
Yes.
Really powerful. Thank you so much for sharing. Mom, you have any comments?
Yeah, well, I just want to say that was so good that, you know, your mother was there to look at those kids because they could have gotten into anything, you know?
Yeah.
But when somebody loved children. And willing to see your kids. We used to look out the door in the project to see when those kids were coming from school that nothing happened to them on the elevator.
Yeah.
Right.
Every day, one of my parents would be out there watching for when those kids go to school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no need for nobody to tell me that morale hit the little boy up the street for nothing, you know, because I'm already out there looking.
And those things were so important.
Some people didn't want you to tell them what the kids did now.
Right.
If the kids were a little bit too bad, they didn't want you to tell them. I know a lady stopped speaking to me for a long time because I told her something that her son had did.
Yeah.
But I had to watch out for the neighbor's house, you know? And I'm so glad that I had that experience, you know, so I could teach my kids. And you bring your kids to my house, I'm going to say to them in a nice way, all right, now you can't put your foot up on that couch like that.
Right.
Some people don't want you to tell their kids what to do and what not to do.
Oh, yeah.
But I told the cop, he came to the house with this little boy, and he had the little boy by his hand, and the little boy started crying as soon as he seen me. Oh, yeah, she beat me. She beat me for nothing. I say, cop, you bring this boy home. You don't believe I whipped him for nothing. I said, well, you know, you can't be whipping him. I said, why? I said, if he could go in the store and take anything he wants and do whatever he wants with him, with it, because
yes.
I am the one that got to take care of him.
That's right.
Before he starts to eat, lift up his shirt, look what she did. He took him aside. He said, let me tell you something. She said, you beat him, but you leave no mark. And would you go? You go into the store tomorrow after you leave school and take something out of the store? No, sir. I said that's what you tell him, because I'm the one that's taking care of him.
Yes.
But he thought he was going to get by because he had brought the cops home on me. That's my grandson now. Now he called me and he just thanked me for how
yes,
I raised. You know, but
it
you
is,
got them. You can't leave them for the
same
because when they take them, they beat them. You ain't gonna know nothing about it, and they gonna leave box scars and bruises.
You know,
right?
Yeah, mental and physical.
Pardon
me.
Absolutely.
Pardon me a moment,
yeah.
please. Because what's happening is what has been happening since we've had latchkey kids, as we used to call it, we've been so busy trying to give our kids everything or have everything
yes.
nice and what have you. We forgot about them. And what's happening is that now the prison industrial complex is raising them.
Uh-huh.
All right. And so on. So they've taken the discipline out of our hands and made it criminal so
yeah.
that they can use them in the prisons, you know, to work for the state or the federal government, you know,
right.
and keep that money flowing because now this has become an investment.
Mm.
Our prison industrial mm. complex has become an investment. And so
wow.
on. So the more that you have, the more people that you have in the prison, the more the stocks could go up. Because these prisons are privately owned now. They're going to try to stop them, but these prisons are privately
mm-hmm.
owned, you know.
Right,
and so,
right.
So what are you going to they stop us from chastising our children at home, but they beat them to death
yeah.
in
right.
the prison.
Yes, yes.
And when
wow.
they come out, or
yeah.
if they come out, or if they come out,
uh-huh.
they're not worth
uh-huh.
it.
It's true. Yeah. It's definitely yep. true. Listen, this is a hot topic. We have like a few minutes left. Oh, Mr. Brother, you know, what would I call you? You would be the, in terms of just, you know, your mother gathering the community, you know,
yeah.
and you're part of that legacy,
yep.
you know, Ronald Lee Robinson, yep. you know, just thank you so much. You know, for your input and Mama Gaylord, you know, that's what we're going to call you now, Mama Gaylord, you know, just your wisdom and your insight. I believe that we want to get to a place of strength based in terms of, you know, what can we do now or what are we doing now? And I believe that this show is teaching people how to make the most of where they are. And as Dr. Guan was saying earlier, taking advantage as we give out information, you know, on how to be a good employer, how to be a good business person, how to be a good parent, how to, you know, take back raising our children. That's what we started out with earlier with Mrs. Sharon Mullings, you know, Nielsen, and then learning to love ourselves, learning to forgive ourselves and forgive one another. And that's what's so important so that we can sit down, have the challenging conversations, but the necessary conversations so that healing and wholeness can come back individually, you know, and holistically to our community. And Dr. Ron, do we have any, we have a few more minutes. Do we have anyone that has called, anyone else has called in? So thank you, Mr. Robinson.
No, I think that, you know, it would be a little excessive now because of the time frame that you have left.
Okay.
You know?
Right.
I think, you know, you maybe mother or, you know, you or mother have something you know, you want to wrap, you want to say to the people as well.
Well, I would like to say one thing. Before, when something happened at the school, before you go out there and want to beat the teacher, you act that child over again. What did you say that she did to you? What did you say that he did to you? Because the teacher will also lie on your child. But you, if you catch in your child long enough, you know whether he's lying or not. But you got to make sure you don't go up there and want to beat up the whole school because the teacher say your child do this and you don't believe that he did it when you know the boy is a little thief.
Yes.
You
wow.
him over and over until he or she give you the right answer before you go up there and try to take the roof off the school.
Wow.
That's all I would
say.
Yeah, that's important. That's
important. It's interesting because as an educator, Mom, that was very powerful because now parents are learning their child as they've had the opportunity for those that are still in remote learning. One entire year, to be with little Johnny. One entire year to be with little Judy. And then they realize that Judy, is not as cute as Judy's been acting, and to see the real Judy. But yet, I believe as we talked about in the show, females, we are bent, we are wired to really, as well as men, but because this is, the month to celebrate the female and the indomitable spirit of female, just like you, Mom, to be able to now take our children back so that we can present them, to the world so that they won't get the beat downs, and that they won't cause so much trouble in the communities, but they can become healthy adults. So, again, this has been a great show. I want to say thank you for all of the callers, all those that have texted in, those that are behind the scenes doing the engineering, and, of course, Dr. Winborn, visionary and CEO of Neo Nation, and Dr. Ron, and thank you, Mr. Ronald A. Robinson, of course, Mrs. Sharon Nielsen Mullings, and Mama Gaylord. I want to close out by saying, this is in you're welcome, definitely. Morel Brown Incorporated, where we provide training.
Thank you.
You're welcome in professional and personal development as well as workshop facilitation, life coaching, and mentoring. Give me a call so that we can, we're saying 15 minutes free consultation, 15 minutes, whatever you want to talk about to be able to map out where you are and to help you to where you want to go. And definitely give me a call. 862-05-9077. Again, that number is 862-205-9077. Or take a look at my website, www.morelbrownincorporated.com. And that's M-O-R-E-A-L-E, Brown, I-N-C, .com. Thank you so much, and definitely have a great night.
You also. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. Have a nice night.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry.
Don't ever
leave.
better. Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.